Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 81 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 70s. Then, tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, it will be cloudy with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
And welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This week I'm reading still from the May issue of Entertainment Weekly. It's our third reading from the magazine. I am going to start, though, with your editor's letter, a weekly dispatch that I get through email. If you're into 90s nostalgia, TRL, bandana crop tops, and or girl groups, there's a new show for you. In Peacock's Girls 5 Eva, Sarah Bareilles, Renee Elise Goldsberry, Paula Pell, and Busy Phillips play members of a one-hit wonder girl group from the 90s. But when a rapper options one of their songs more than 20 years later, they get a second chance at the stardom that they only really sort of ever had. The new show, from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt's Meredith Scardino and executive producer Tina Fey, follows the women as they reunite and see if they achieve their dreams, without all those insanely demeaning lyrics that defined their early years together. After all, they want to be famous five Eva, because forever's too short. What comedy has caught your eye lately? Email your response to editors.letter@ew.com. Until next week, Sam, and her Twitter address is @SamHighFill, SamHighFill. Next, it's five things to say at a virtual party, the best and worst news of the week. Number one, Marvel knew exactly what they were doing when they put a movie theater reaction video in their latest trailer, and it worked. Number two, HBO knew exactly what they were doing when they added Alexander Skarsgård to Succession, and it also worked. Number three, warn your dad, Conan is set to end in June. Number four, Eva Longoria has chosen the cast for her Flamin' Hot Cheetos inventor biopic. Up next, a miniseries on honey barbecue Fritos. And number five, The Circle declares its second winner, but the real winners are the viewers. I'm kidding. We're definitely the losers. What to watch? All your TV dilemmas sorted. On May 7th, it's Shrill on Hulu. It's time for the final season of that Hulu comedy starring Aidy Bryant that never really caught on. On May 10th and 11th, it's The Crime of the Century on HBO. The two-part documentary traces America's opioid epidemic back to the crime that started it all. On May 12th, it's The Hills, New Beginnings. If you don't know what The Hills is at this point, it's probably not worth watching. But, as the kids say, if you know, you know. Sorry, I mean I-Y-K-Y-K. Mom is on May 13th, that's on CBS. After eight seasons, the cast of Mom will say goodbye with its series finale. And your binge? ER. That's on Hulu. This binge isn't for the lighthearted, both because of the 15 seasons and, well, all the blood. But it's so worth it. Under the special guest staffer heading, we have Nick Romano. His Twitter address is @NickARomano, NickARomano. His pick, Real Housewives on Hulu. I had never experienced the marvel of a cinematic universe that is The Real Housewives until my boyfriend's long-term relationship with the reality TV dynasty made it clear that I had to at least sit through a few episodes. Countless reunions, vacation blowouts, and don't you talk about my family, screen fits later. I am but a shadow of this former negative Nancy and more closely resemble Team Dorita. I know her name is Dorinda, the New York housewife, but after a couple vodka sodas, the only thing I can think of when she pops on the screen is a Doritos Locos taco from Taco Bell. Lately, I've been courting the Salt Lake City gals because of the juicy premise. A bunch of rich, mostly ex or current Mormons throwing wild parties and causing drama in Utah sells itself. Then, twist, one of the housewives married her step-grandfather because of a clause in her biological grandmother's will. And then, double twist, another housewife got arrested while filming season 2 on charges of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and money laundering and may have definitely rented her season 1 house just so she could get on the show. Best drama Emmys all around. That was our editor's letter for this week, the weekly email that I get. Next, I'm going to the beginning of the May magazine. They have a section that they call the Cold Open, a mouthful of pop culture one bite at a time. The first piece, or their first bite here, is what they call a moment of Venn. And so there's a Venn diagram here. I hope I do it justice, but it's all circles, and the middle circle says zombies. And then there's 7 circles that go around the edges of it. So each category interacts with the zombies, but also has an intersection with the circles on either side. The article is called Zombie All You Can Be. Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead is hardly the only monster mashup. Director Zack Snyder's fusing of the heist thriller with the zombie movie in Netflix's Army of the Dead, out May 21st, is just the latest example of a filmmaker breathing new life into the world of the undead by melding it with another genre. In the half century since George A. Romero introduced the idea of reanimated flesh-eating ghouls to unsuspecting audiences with Night of the Living Dead, zombies have staggered into musicals, comedies, young adult adventures, Christmas flicks, and every other imaginable kind of big screen entertainment. Feast your eyes on our explanatory diagram. So we've got our Venn diagram. Each of these categories touches on zombies, but then they'll be connected to others. In the romance category, this is pure romance and zombies. It's My Boyfriend's Back from 1993. As romance touches on comedy, we could watch Shaun of the Dead from 2004. For zombies and comedy together, you can count on Zombievers. That looks like zombified beavers, if you ask me. That is from 2015. As comedy touches into indie, it's The Dead Don't Die in 2019. And if you want pure indie and zombies, you can have Maggie from 2015. As we first learned here, zombies in a heist movie together would be Army of the Dead. That's 2021, out now. But if you have a heist and Christmas with your zombies, you can count on Silent Night, Zombie Night. That was from 2009. A Christmas musical with zombies would be Anna and the Apocalypse. That was 2018. But if you just want a musical with your zombies, you can have Dead and Breakfast from 2004. As you get into the young adult category, with a bit of musical tossed in, it's Zombies, Zombies from 2018. And Young Adult Zombies would be The Girl with All the Gifts from 2016. And as we get back into the romance area for Young Adult, you can watch Warm Bodies from 2013. That was our moment of Venn and the Venn diagram titled Zombie All You Can Be. The year is 1961. Vilified, how Mary Wicks became the original live-action Cruella. Long before Emma Stone went to the dogs in Cruella, Mary Wicks helped animators to envision a most devilish dame. Disney often brought in live-action models for inspiration, but using an actress of Wicks' stature was rare. She had very distinctive features, Steve Taravella, author of Mary Wicks, I Know I've Seen That Face Before, says of Wicks' casting in 1961's 101 Dalmatians. She was tall, lanky, and had exaggerated expressions. In 1959, the droll character actress from White Christmas and Sister Act spent 2 weeks on a soundstage in a wig and fur coat, vamping to recordings of Cruella de Vil's dialogue. While to see Cruella is to take a sudden chill, you come to realize Wicks's undeniable impact. Cruella is unorthodox, Taravella adds. That was Mary. Disney chose somebody with an unconventional aura. What a perfectly wretched legacy, darlings. That was by Maureen Lee Lanker. The next piece is called My Surprising Fandom. This is Yvonne Orji. You ought to know that the insecure star worships at the Star of Alanis. The very first album I bought with my little Columbia House stamps, remember those? Was Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. Unless you've actually gone karaokeing with me, you probably don't know how big a fan of Alanis I am. I'm still very much the you ought to know karaoke queen. That is my go-to because I feel like there is so much rage and anger and you belt it out. I'm really not ever that angry or filled with that much rage. I also can't sing, so I was like, if I just shout, maybe that counts. The whole album is a classic. In middle school, I didn't know Love or The Pain from Love, but it was just, and she's imitating Morissette singing in this section, they don't call that out, and I was like, I want to do that. Ironic was so popular, and it's funny because the Nigerian in me was like, that is not appropriate grammar. My high school English teacher was like, that song is really not explaining irony. It's just a series of unfortunate events. She proceeded to define ironic, and we were like, don't ruin it for us. That was My Surprising Fandom, as told to Dan Snyerson. The next one is called The Swap, Picture in Picture. Watched all 8 Oscar Best Picture nominees? Match your favorite with a throwback to create a winning double feature. Or why not envelope yourself in them all? Surely there's an award for that. This is by Maureen Lee Lanker. If you saw The Father, try The Dresser. Nothing can come of nothing, so it's rather fortuitous that both Anthony Hopkins and Albert Finney are doing the most in these King Lear-esque tales of mercurial aging figureheads and their struggling loyal caretakers. Judas and the Black Messiah and the Black Panthers' Vanguard of the Revolution. Betrayed Fred Hampton now has a sobering biopic, but also keep your eyes on the prize with this documentary about the revolutionary Black Panther Party, bursting with rare archival footage and grim relevance. Mank and Citizen Kane. Given that Mank is about the man who inspired, that's William Randolph Hearst, and wrote, that's Herman J. Mankiewicz, Citizen Kane, pairing these titles together is as obvious as the Rosebud sled reveal, is oblique. 80-year-old spoiler alert. And Minari and Places in the Heart. A family struggling to achieve the American dream on a farm as prejudice and nature conspire against them is a timeless tale. Whether it's Korean immigrants or a Depression-era found family, we like it. We really like it. Nomadland and the Grapes of Wrath. Modern-day nomads are the spiritual successors to Dust Bowl Okies with Fern's journey across America mirroring that of the Joad family. We'll see you down the road is the new I'll Be There. So where's the Springsteen song? Promising Young Woman and Clute. Righteously vengeful women date back to the Greeks. Hi, Medea. Still, Clute's paranoia and steely yet vulnerable heroine avenging her friends seems an essential blueprint. But Carey Mulligan's wig work can't compete with Jane Fonda's epic shag. Sound of Metal and Children of a Lesser God. It's not hard to drum up enthusiasm for the trailblazing performances in these explorations of deftness and ableism. Both protagonists wrestle with a choice between romance and community, and their answer lies in The Sound of Silence. And the last one is The Trial of the Chicago Seven and 12 Angry Men. 12 Angry Men set an American precedent for courtroom drama. Aaron Sorkin's latest puts his finger on the scales. Both use a number of angry men to delve into how we define and implement justice, whether or not the whole world is watching. Here's a birthday haiku for Adele. Her birthday was May 5th. Ms. Dazim, it's May. May this B-Day roll deep. 33, hello. Album name? Here are songs with feels in the title, ranked. There are seven here. One, number one, is Feels Like We Only Go Backwards by Tame Impala. Number two, Feels Like the First Time by Foreigner. Number three, Feels by Kehlani. Four, Feels Like Summer by Childish Gambino. Five, The Feels by Maren Loris. Number six, Feels by Kilara. And number seven, Feels by Watts featuring Khalid. Here's a pop culture pet peeve. Text education. Why do TV characters always text like it's their first conversation? Sydney Buxbaum investigates. And you have a picture here of somebody holding a phone, and they have a text screen up, and there's only one text line in there. And when you text with people regularly, you have a whole string of texts that you've been sending because it's an ongoing conversation. So it says, no one keeps texts at inbox zero. Only monsters or criminals delete every message after reading. But TV characters text friends and loved ones like it's the first message they've ever exchanged. Shows new, like The Undoing and Emily in Paris, and old, Grey's Anatomy and New Girl, are all offenders in pretending people don't have text histories. Did producers just forget to include older texts? Or is adding a few more bubbles somehow too much post-production work? None of the above. There's a whole art to texting on screen, insists Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist creator, Austin Winsberg. The bottom line? You don't want people to be confused. Texts are actually written into scripts to serve a purpose, share information to drive the plot forward. Additional unnecessary texts distract viewers and take too long to read, and every millisecond is precious, explains Winsberg. You have to simplify what's going on graphically. Message received. Next is something called the rank. In the loop. Video games have been looping forever. Rogue pioneered a play-die-repeat subgenre in 1980. Majora's Mask gave moon anxiety to kids in 2000, and 2019's Outer Wilds made sun explosions a chill time. Now Arkane Studios resets the tradition with Deathloop, out May 21st. Think Groundhog Day meets The Purge, plus superpowered assassins. In celebration, we present our five favorite movies and shows that move the genre forward and back. This is by Evan Lewis. They are starting with number two, Russian Doll 2019. When Nadia, played by Natasha Lyonne, repeatedly wakes up in a loop, her first impulses are, one, to check in with her drug dealer, and two, have herself committed, which, yeah, seems like pretty logical responses. Number three, Palm Springs from 2020. Niles, played by Andy Samberg, embraces the nihilism of never-ending sex, drugs, and crossbow evasion until Sarah, played by Kristen Milioti, gives him something to care about in this oh-so 2020 temporal rom-com. Number 4, Edge of Tomorrow from 2014. The source material for this flashy, swarm-to-charm Tom Cruise spectacle, Hiroshi Sakurazaka's light novel All You Need Is Kill, was inspired by the unflashy experience of reloading a game. Number 5, The Endless from 2018. This low-budget, high-intrigue sibling drama and cult mystery from Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead from Resolution leans more into the Lovecraftian angle of being trapped in a trippy time prism. And now we're at number 1, Groundhog Day from 1993. The Ur-loop against which all other loops are judged. Something has definitely gone right when just about all other time anomaly media is described as Groundhog Day meets. That was Evan Lewis writing about movies with time loops. The next one is called Under the Cover, Nurture versus Nature. It's been 7 years since Porter Robinson released his career-redefining album, Worlds, and a year of teasing its vulnerable follow-up, Nurture. So it fits that the cover shoot was such a process, says the electronic Wunderkind. Days of hopping farm fences for flower fields, and thousands of images later, he dropped face down on a whim for the last shot. I wanted to make people feel the grass on their skin. He got his wish, but paid the price. The irony of it is that I'm allergic to grass, he admits, but it was worth it. That was Nurture versus Nature, about a cover picture, and that was by Sydney Buxbaum. And that wraps up the section called The Cold Open, a mouthful of pop culture, one bite at a time. Next, I'm going to the features section for the article called Firestarter, how Angelina Jolie blazed a trail with Taylor Sheridan for the upcoming firefighting film, Those Who Wish Me Dead, her first action movie in more than a decade. This is by Devin Coggan. For Angelina Jolie, the hardest part of making Those Who Wish Me Dead wasn't the scene where she holds her breath underwater as a wildfire rages overhead, or when she has to outmaneuver two approaching murderers as squibs explode around her. It wasn't even the sequence where she races through a tinderbox of a forest, desperately trying to outrun the flames. No, her biggest challenge was being too nice. The 45-year-old actress stars in Taylor Sheridan's survival thriller as Hannah, a brusque, no-nonsense firefighter tasked with protecting a shell-shocked 12-year-old, played by Finn Little. As Hannah reluctantly guides the young boy through the Montana wilderness, Jolie, herself a mom of six, found it difficult to suppress her own parental instincts. My character is not maternal by nature, Jolie says. Sometimes Taylor would correct me because my behavior toward a child was different from Hannah's behavior toward a child. It took me a little bit to treat Finn badly, but I got there. The film marks Jolie's long-awaited return to action heroism. After stacking her career with stunt-heavy flicks like Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Wanted, and Salt, Jolie stepped behind the camera and has spent much of the past few years directing dramas like Unbroken and First They Killed My Father. But 2021 will see a splashy return to the screen and to stunt work. Those Who Wish Me Dead, in theaters and on HBO Max May 14th, will be followed by the centuries-spanning Marvel epic Eternals in November. I love directing, but I had a change in my family situation that's not made it possible for me to direct for a few years, says the star, who's been in messy divorce proceedings with Brad Pitt and custody battles over their children since 2016. I needed to just do shorter jobs and be home more, so I kind of went back to doing a few acting jobs. That's really the truth of it. She found herself drawn to films that would allow her to use those stunt skills while also exploring new depths, like Sheridan's taut thriller. A former actor himself, the Oscar-nominated Sheridan has carved out a filmography of tense modern westerns, both as a writer, from Sicario and Hell or High Water, and director from Wind River. He has a unique voice when it comes to characters within America, which had not been a prior focus of my work, Jolie says. I wanted to be in this world with him. Based on Michael Kortya's 2014 novel, Those Who Wish Me Dead, centers on Jolie's Hannah, an expert smoke jumper, the name for the specially trained group of firefighters who parachute into a blazing wilderness, haunted by a past mission gone wrong. She keeps watch at a lonely fire tower and stumbles upon Connor, played by Little, a traumatized preteen being stalked by two killers, played by Nicholas Holt and Aidan Gillen. Together, they're isolated in the wild, trapped between man and Mother Nature. Although the Oscar-winning Jolie has been acting since she was a child, she made her screen debut at 7 in 1982's Lookin' to Get Out, her directing experience has shifted the way she approaches filmmaking. In very technical terms, I'm more aware of what the director needs and what other challenges they're facing and how many different pieces are moving, she explains. For Those Who Wish Me Dead, that meant a heightened respect and patience for the film's complicated set pieces. Maybe when you're younger and you're having a huge day where you have to be cold and wet and emotional and crying, you're thinking about those things, Jolie adds. Now you've directed and you're older and you realize that while you are going to be freezing and crying, there's also pyrotechnics going on or multiple other situations. It pulls you out of yourself. In one sequence, where Hannah and Connor try to outrun the wildfire, the production team rigged an enormous woodland set, which was safely set ablaze. Taylor must have spent this huge amount of money on this fake forest, the Australian Little, 14, says with a laugh. It was like you built this massive thing just to burn it down. Real firefighters also stayed on the set to carefully contain the inferno, and Jolie met with several of them for insight into the perilous world of smoke jumping. The first day we were in the fire, I noticed the heat and how quickly the winds would change and how quickly the fire would suddenly take to a tree that you weren't expecting, she says. Our respect just grew day after day for these people on the front lines and how difficult this work is. Jolie adds that she relished the chance to take a grittier, more down-to-earth action role than she's tackled in the past. There's nothing about this character that trained in martial arts or did anything special, she says. I get pretty beaten up through this. But she still took the time to impart some of her action heroine wisdom upon her younger co-star. She sort of walked me through it and made sure I was safe, Little explains. She went out of her way to make me feel really accepted. Sometimes those mom instincts just can't be stifled. Under the heading of Eternally Yours, the sidebar says next up on Jolie's docket, after Dead, a spin through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Angelina Jolie has played spies and sorceresses, but she's now adding a new fierce role to her resume, superhero. The actress stars in Chloe Zhao's Eternals, out November 5th, Marvel's next blockbuster about a squad of superhumans. I have 6 kids, and we've been following the Marvel Universe and enjoying it over the years, so I see what those stories can bring, says Jolie. I'm a fan, so it was fun to get a call. The Eternals are a group of ageless aliens who've been flitting around the fringes of history and secretly protecting humanity through the ages. I love the diversity of the cast and this new family unit that's coming forward, says Jolie, who portrays the immortal warrior Athena, alongside co-stars Richard Madden, Kumail Nanjiani, Brian Tyree Henry, Salma Hayek, Gemma Chan, and Kit Harington. I was very happy to be a part of that. So that was about Angelina Jolie in the movie The Eternals, and it was a sidebar to the feature story Firestarter by Devin Coggan. I'm going to take a moment here to say that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I am reading from the May issue of Entertainment Weekly. The next story is Demi's New Groove. After detailing her harrowing 2018 overdose in a recent documentary, the 28-year-old pop star returns with a newfound sense of stability and her first album of new material in 4 years. Dancing with the Devil, The Art of Starting Over, out now. To make it, she had to rethink everything. This is by Shana Naomi Krokmal. Like a lot of us living through this past year, time moves differently now for Demi Lovato. I can't predict what my needs are going to be in 10 minutes, she says, and I can't predict what they'll be 10 days from now. The difference between Lovato now and Lovato, say, 3 years ago, is that she's okay with that. Even after working on a documentary and supersize album, her first full-length work since 2017, she has managed to slow down, finally making time bend to her will instead of the other way around. Despite a harrowing near miss with death, her 2018 overdose on fentanyl led to a heart attack, multiple strokes, and temporary blindness, followed by her latest stint in rehab, she has now officially survived the 27 Club, that apocryphal endpoint for too many celebs. As a 28-year-old woman who struggles with addiction, an eating disorder, and the compounded trauma of multiple sexual assaults, and who has been in the public eye for two-thirds of her life, she knew that to get herself to a place approaching stability and balance, there wasn't just one thing to fix. I've had to reshape my thinking, she says. I used to just say everything. Now I keep some things to myself. She has better boundaries now, but fewer rules. She eats what feels right, wears oversized sweatshirts and Birkenstocks, and doesn't work out to exhaustion. She cut off her long hair, then cut it some more. She's not just willing, but excited to talk about how queer she is. For the first time in her life, she takes weekends off. I work really hard during the week, and it's just important to me that I have a few days off, says Lovato, who's been working professionally since she was a preteen. That was never an option for me growing up. It's empowering to be like, hey, my values have changed. I'm putting my wellness in front of my work. In early 2020, Lovato had just begun to come out of the darkness. She crushed a doubleheader of live vocal performances, first the emotional Anyone at the Grammys, then a flawless, soaring national anthem at the Super Bowl a week later. I was assuming that the world was going to be fine and I was going to go on tour and release an album, she says, shaking her head in disbelief. 1 year ago today, I had not met my ex-fiancé. The amount that has changed in 12 months is crazy. She stops herself. I hate that word, but it is wild. When Entertainment Weekly talks with Lovato in early March over Zoom, she's curled up at her home, barefaced and beaming on a Friday afternoon before one of her precious weekends off. She laughs a lot. Sometimes her eyes well up with tears, and then she laughs again. She seems easy in her skin, radiant with self-awareness, and that alone is a stark reminder of how truly close she came to dying. As revealed through excruciating personal footage in the just-released documentary, Demi Lovato Dancing with the Devil, after 6 years of very public sobriety, she started drinking again and reconnected with former drug dealers for a perilous escalation from coke and Xanax to crack and heroin. Though a film crew followed her for much of 2018, she successfully hid how bad it had gotten, right up until her personal assistant found her lying naked and unconscious in a bedroom, her body turned blue. The film preemptively asks and answers a battery of painful questions. Has she relapsed since the OD? Yes, once, with a crack and heroin combo from the same dealer, minus the nearly lethal fentanyl twist. She recounts with startling bluntness her attempt to reclaim a sense of sexual agency, having concluded that the blackout sex she'd had with that dealer the night she OD'd could not have been consensual. Does she have other hashtag MeToo stories? Yes. Lovato doesn't name the perpetrator, but reveals that her first sexual experience was being raped as a teen. I didn't have the romantic first time with anybody, she says. And that sucked. Although she reported the assault, the person was allowed to continue working, and the details she does include are sure to open a Pandora's box of internet sleuthing to determine who might have been involved. Is she fully sober? In the documentary, Lovato reveals that her present approach to sobriety includes some alcohol and weed. We hear from her friends and family who share their concerns about this approach. Even the reigning king of celebrity 12-step success story, Sir Elton John, weighs in. Moderation doesn't work. With all due respect to John's long tenure, 30-plus years clean and sober, Lovato says, "It's working for me, and it has worked over the past 2 years. My whole point is that it's not a one-size-fits-all solution." Today, the singer sums up her approach to sobriety this way. "Look, you obviously don't touch anything that can kill you. If it comes from the ground, it's safe for me, you know?" She leans forward, giggling a bit as she speaks directly into the computer's camera. The key word is green. Her new album, out now, can also be played as a companion piece to the documentary and covers similar emotional territory, both metaphorically and sometimes literally. "I've been working on it since Valentine's Day of 2018, and I can't tell you how many times this album has changed course," she says. It swelled over recent months to include 19 tracks and eventually took on its own hybrid double title, Dancing with the Devil, The Art of Starting Over. Lovato wrote a number of the songs over the course of a COVID-safe songwriting camp last October with Justin Tranter and others. Over group dinners, Tranter says, "She's just sharing stories, and we'd be like, oh, that's a song. That's a song. That's a song." In the mornings, before each team split off, they would huddle to decide who was working on what. And Demi would keep checking on us to make sure we aren't effing it up. Among the songs with parallel beats in the film are Melon Cake, about how Lovato's former team would substitute watermelon cakes instead of the real thing on her birthday, and I See You, a stripped-down ballad about waking up in the hospital temporarily blind and not being able to recognize her sister at her bedside. California Sober, shorthand for people in recovery from other substances who still find relief in marijuana, particularly for treatment of anxiety, is a nod to her keyword, green. "I never want to box myself into anything anymore," she says. "That's what, I think, led to all this, me putting pressure on myself and feeling pressured by others to be something of a role model." Lovato's had a long and successful run at the pop charts, with 6 studio albums since 2008, all of them certified gold or platinum. But The Art of Starting Over feels more deliberate, musically, than anything she's done before. Scooter Braun, now Lovato's manager, says they fended off the record label's questions about which songs would be singles. "I don't care about singles," she says. "I care about the story." That's not to say that the album doesn't sound commercial, because it does. There's a golden warmth to the music, a little Stevie Nicks and Alanis Morissette, at their most jagged and carefree. Even the darker songs have a lightness you might not expect for such heavy emotional territory. Lovato says this is the first project that has let her see her child of an album grow into a teenager. Asked what kind of teen she's now responsible for, Lovato says, in the lingua franca of the genre, she's all the feels. 2 songs mine her experience with addiction in such a raw and explicit way, they make Lovato a little nervous. In Dancing with the Devil, she sings about using a glass pipe and tinfoil while getting high. That could trigger someone in their addiction, she says. Sometimes being descriptive can be triggering, but that's the sad, sad truth of how dark it can get. That's important to give people, too. The Way You Don't Look at Me, a standout track with a swirling melodic hook, opens with Lovato singing, "I've lost 10 pounds in 2 weeks because I told me I shouldn't eat." In the second verse, she adds, "I'm so scared if I undress that you won't love me after," and describes losing the focus of someone's attention as a pain that hurts harder than my time in heaven. Of her willingness to go there in her art, She tells Entertainment Weekly, "If I'm painting a picture as an artist, telling my truth is so important to me. I don't censor my substance use in Dancing with the Devil. I don't hold back from that, so I don't want to hold back from any other place in my authenticity, you know?" Still, this album isn't just a teenager who wants to curl up in the dark and cry. She's meant to be played loudly in the car, preferably driving down the Pacific Coast Highway. And, says Lovato, she's also really queer. Really, really queer. For Lovato, the 2020 quick pivot from the verge of a comeback to quarantine was at first just an untimely interruption to her long-awaited return. Then came an unexpected romantic plot twist in the form of actor Max Ehrich, who went from new love to fiancé to ex, all in a little more than 6 months. She doesn't refer to him by name in the documentary or this interview, but she's not avoiding the obvious. "I really had myself fooled because it was the safe and expected thing," she says. "Obviously, I cared deeply about the person, but there was something inside of me that was like, I have to prove to the world that I'm okay. Now that I'm not engaged or married and I'm okay, I'm like, wow, isn't that so much more empowering? It's not this false sense of security." Lovato hasn't always been forthcoming in talking about her sexuality, which in the past earned her some ire from other LGBTQ artists and in the media, especially after shooting the video for 2014's Really Don't Care on a float during Los Angeles' Pride Parade. Even when her bouncy, bi-curious Cool for the Summer was released in 2015, "I never said anything," Lovato admits. "Gender norms and sexuality norms aside, I kind of felt a prisoner to my entire career and childhood growing up in the South as a Christian." She vaguely affirmed that she wasn't exclusively into men, though publicly she was seen only with boyfriends. In her 2017 documentary, Simply Complicated, she mentions searching for men and women on the dating app Raya. But the topic of her sexuality has often felt more like an uncomfortable standoff with the community rather than a powerful and proud declaration. Post-Ehrich, she's finally eager to make that declaration loud and clear. On a Facebook Watch special for National Coming Out Day last October, she told Queer Eye's Tan France that she came out to her older sister about liking girls when she was 17, then eventually told her parents. "I think time is everything," she says. "The queerness in me was, like, ready to explode when I filmed the music video at Pride. And then people would ask me, why are you so passionate about this? And I would clam up." Like, she shakes her head again. "When I watched that video to this day, there's part of me that kind of cringes. I wanted so badly to be the person that I am today." In the wake of her relationship with Ehrich, she also came to understand that she was just too queer to settle down with a man right now. "I don't know if that will change in 10 years, and I don't know if that'll never change, but I love accepting myself." As Lovato says with unapologetic bluntness, "I've always known I was hella queer, but I have fully embraced it." While she waits with the rest of us for the world to open back up and to the possibility of touring, she's also quite content to keep her energy focused on her own well-being. When you start doing the work on yourself, you start noticing your intuition becoming louder and then more accurate, she says. "I'm not just owning listening to my needs, my wants in the moment and moving forward. The more you try to be what others want you to be, the farther you get from your true self. It's only when you start allowing yourself the freedom to be yourself that all constraints are gone." She laughs again, bright and boundless. It's officially the weekend, and she's about to head out to meditate with her healer and then rewatch The Walking Dead with friends. "I always thought there was a book or something that would tell me who I was," she says. "Really, it's just like, no, bitch, just do what makes you happy." You're like, it can't be that simple. It actually is. If it feels right in your gut and you're not harming anybody, then do what makes you happy. That was the feature article about Demi Lovato called Demi's New Groove, and it was by Shana Naomi Krokmal. As the sidebar here, we have a list. Hashtag Devils in the Details. We examine 6 new songs off Lovato's latest album, Dancing with the Devil, The Art of Starting Over. Dancing with the Devil and The Art of Starting Over, the album's mashup title, came from 2 very different sounding tracks. Dancing evokes Adele's Bond theme, while Starting Over sounds more like early Stevie Nicks. Lonely People. This one reminds us that the epitome of romantic heroes, Romeo and Juliet, have left, and ends on another tough love note. We all die alone, so you better love yourself before you go. My Girlfriends Are My Boyfriend. A weirdly coy but catchy throwback tribute to the power of gal pals. Girlfriends includes a feature from Saweetie, but isn't panned at all by Lovato, and sounds less fully realized for it. The Kind of Lover I Am. Quote-unquote lover needs no room for misunderstanding. Doesn't matter if you're a woman or a man, that's the kind of lover I am, sings Lovato. Or, as co-writer Justin Tranter put it to Entertainment Weekly, if you're interested in being Demi Lovato's lover, this is what's happening. And the last one is Carefully, a dreamy, trippy tune that begs the listener to approach with caution. Lovato also pleads, handle me carefully, my insecurities don't take vacations. That was Devils in the Details, and it was about 6 new songs off Lovato's latest album, Dancing with the Devil, The Art of Starting Over. I'm going to jump over to the What to Watch section and take a look at what's coming up this week on television. On Sunday, May 9th, it's a series debut, Z-Way. That's Z-I-W-E on Showtime. Before getting your Z's, get some Z-Way on this late-night variety series. Friday, May 14th, there's a season premiere, High School Musical, The Series, on Disney+. Like colons? Love SAT analogies? Did you miss the season 1 finale? No worries. Ninny, colon, Ricky, colon, Ashlyn, colon, Big Red. Also on Friday, May 14th, is The Underground Railroad on Amazon Prime Video. Director Barry Jenkins transforms the hidden routes that antebellum-era slaves used to escape the South into an actual rail system. That's good enough to get us through to the reading next week. I'm also going to wrap up this week with reading a little bit from Entertainment Weekly Online, because they have an article called The 20 Best New Books to Read in May. And here we are, into May. You're not going to get through all 20 of them, I'm sure, but let's see how many we can get through as we wrap up this hour. The website is EW.com, and this article is by Sija Rankin. For number 1, the first one she has, I don't know that these are ranked, but the first one is called The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave. Currently in the works as an Apple TV Plus adaptation starring Julia Roberts, this page-turner opens as the protagonist's husband disappears on the same day it's announced that his company is being investigated by the federal government. He leaves her only a clandestine note about his daughter, Save Bailey, kicking off a wild ride that sees the mother-stepdaughter pair traveling across the country to uncover what really happened. That was out May 4th. Sunshine Girl by Juliana Margulies. In an unflinching memoir, the Good Wife actress opens up about her disjointed childhood, her parents' messy divorce, her rise to fame, and, of course, George Clooney. That was out May 4th. The Wreckage of My Presence. This is a book of essays by Casey Wilson. The comedian, podcast host, and, perhaps most notably, People's Most Beautiful 40-year-old, pens a collection of essays inspired by the grief she felt surrounding her mother's passing and the people and co-stars who helped her through. She shares rip-roaring stories about her wacky upbringing and her early days on the comedy scene and reflects on the lessons she's learned so far. That was also out May 4th. Great Circle, a novel by Maggie Shipstead. A gargantuan of a novel at just over 600 pages, Circle weaves two storylines, the coming-of-age tale of fearless female pilot Marion Graves, saved from a sinking ocean liner in 1914 and eventually lost forever, attempting a record-breaking flight around the world, and the making of a movie about her life in current-day Hollywood. It's a feat of a story in every sense. Out May 4th. Secrets of Happiness by Joan Silber. As protagonist Ethan grapples with the aftermath of a reveal about his father's second and secret family, he finds himself inside his own love triangle. Out May 4th. The Most Beautiful Girl in Cuba by Chanel Cleeton. A historical fiction novel based on the life of Evangelina Cisneros, about three revolutionary women in 19th century Havana. Out May 4th. Hurricane Summer by Asha Brumfield. Narrator Tilla is beginning a summer in Jamaica visiting her semi-estranged father when she uncovers powerful family secrets that affect her own life, all while a hurricane threatens to bear down on the island. This coming-of-age tale tackles colorism, classism, and more. Out May 4th. These are clearly not ranked by best, but by date, so we've fixed that mystery. The next novel is Second Place by Rachel Cusk. Loosely based on famous art patron Mabel Dodge Lujan's relationship with D.H. Lawrence, Cusk's novel veers off course from her usual literary fare with a story about a woman living in a rural European town, enduring some light existential crisis and middle-aged malaise while also entertaining a successful artist on her property. Out May 4th. Sorrowland is by Rivers Solomon. This genre-bending debut blends gothic fiction with fantasy elements following a woman who escapes her religious compound with her newborn twins to live in the woods. Out May 11th. Competitive Grieving by Nora Zelavansky. A dark comedy about a woman dealing with the sudden loss of her closest friend, who just happened to be a rising television star. Out May 11th. While Justice Sleeps by Stacey Abrams. The political leader, who has long moonlighted as a romance novelist under the pen name Selena Montgomery, releases her first legal thriller. Starring Avery Keene, a young law clerk who uncovers a conspiracy theory that involves her boss, a beloved Supreme Court justice. Out May 11th. The Plot by Jean Hanth Korelitz. A novelist and professor who stole the idea for his latest book from his now-dead student, receives an anonymous email that simply says, "You're a thief." The plot, as they say, thickens. Out May 11th. Unsettled Ground by Claire Fuller. Middle-aged twins, Jeannie and Julius, who live in near isolation in the English countryside, with no Wi-Fi or other modern technologies to be found, are forced to fend for themselves after the sudden death of their mother, and to come to grips with the reality that they don't have the idyllic family they once thought. Out May 18th. Yes, Daddy, by Jonathan Parks Ramage. An aspiring playwright begins dating his idol only to uncover ugliness in a glamorous world. Out May 18th. Punch Me Up to the Gods, a memoir by Brian Broome. This devastatingly beautiful memoir about growing up black and gay in rural Ohio introduces a major literary talent in Broome. Out May 18th. Highway Blue by Alyssa McFarlane. The classic road trip novel gets a modern upgrade thanks to McFarlane, a highly promising young writer who's crafted a story about a young couple forced to flee their town, the fictional San Padua, by car. That's out May 18th. Tokyo Ever After by Emiko Jean. Izumi Tanaka is struggling to fit in her Northern California town when she discovers that her estranged father is actually the Crown Prince of Japan. So she travels to meet him and get to know the country, where she encounters sinister family members, a nosy press corps, and potential love. That's out May 18th. The Summer Job by Lizzie Dent. Protagonist Bertie takes a, what else, summer job at a hotel in the Scottish Highlands, where she must pretend to be her best friend, who is also a wine expert. That's out May 18th. Imposter Syndrome by Kathy Wang. A famous Silicon Valley tech company, a female COO under extra scrutiny, a Russian spy ring threatening to close in on the U.S. Kathy Wang's sophomore novel has all the trappings of a book impossible to put down. It follows Julia, a plant sent over from Moscow who landed at Tangerine, a riff on Google, and Alice, a first-generation Chinese-American who discovers a security blip that hints at Julia's two-sided work. That's out May 25th. And our last novel on the list for books coming out in May, Version Zero by David Yoon. A tech expert gets blacklisted from all the major Silicon Valley companies and decides to enact revenge by rebooting the internet. The entire internet. That's out May 25th. I have to say, I'm pretty happy that I got through that entire list while we still have time. That was all from Entertainment Weekly Online. That's EW.com. But I am running out of time for the episode this week. Next week, we still have some feature stories to cover. There's one about standing up and stepping up, and that is about being more inclusive in Hollywood. We still have many of the regular features about movies and TV to come. So please come back next week, and we'll read more from the May issue. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I am volunteer reader Diane Salisbury. Thank you all for listening. Until next week. Goodbye.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
Saturday on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's audio described movie.
Time to rocket from the Delta to the DMZ.
It's 0600. What's the O stand for?
Oh, my God.
It's Mr. Leo.
You know, this whole camouflage thing for me doesn't work very well. Why is that? Well, because you go in the jungle, I can't see you. If you're going to fight, clash.
That is not what we program here.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
You are not funny.
You're not going to last long here.
Boy, do I have a surprise for you.
Good morning, Vietnam.
In 1965, Adrian Cronauer was sent to do the impossible.
I was sent here on very strict orders from a colonel.
What the hell's going on here?
His mission? To build morale.
Where are you from?
Off of Cleveland, man.
Obviously, Vietnam's not that much of a change for you.
His strategy? Keep them laughing.
If someone is not telling the truth, you say that they are full of...
His problem? Staying out of trouble.
You ought to stick to playing normal modes of music. Jim Nabors, Mantovani.
Percy Faith.
Percy Faith, good!
Yeah!
He did a very off-color parody of former VP Nixon.
Seeing as how the VP is such a VIP, shouldn't we keep the PC on the QT? Because if it leaks to the VC, you can end up in MIA, and then we'd all be put on KP.
Sure, the man is a walking keg of dynamite.
He's read unofficial news.
Ethel Merman jams Russian radar.
Hello, I've got a feeling.
What's he going to be like in 6 months?
Big dogs landing on my face.
What's he going to be like when he's 10 times as popular?
What's the weather like out there? It's hot, damn hot, hot and wet. That's nice if you're with a lady, but it ain't no good if you're in the jungle.
Touchstone Pictures presents Robin Williams as Airman Adrian Cronauer, the wrong person.
Very attractive man, Ebersol. Don't think I haven't noticed.
In the wrong place.
This will not look good on a resume!
At the right time.
Good morning, Vietnam!
What a country. Heat, humidity, terrorism. Still, it's better than New York in the summertime.
Robin Williams, Forrest Whitaker, and Bruno Kirby star in the audio described Good Morning Vietnam, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up